Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 62 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and today we've got a special guest from the Nerd Cantina community here, John Mullen. And we're going to cover your weekly news, starting with some entertainment talk. We've got some great Super Bowl ads that we are going to recap. There's some news around the Multiverse of Madness, and then some video game talk regarding Warcraft 3 falling flat and microtransactions ruling the day for EA. Then we're going to move into tech news, and there's some new stories around Amazon's company Ring, bunch of China stuff. And then we'll finish off on some lighter topics surrounding the medical community. A lot to get to. Let's go ahead and get started, nerds.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, welcome back, nerds, to episode 62. To get started here, we are very excited to one, not just have me and Steve talk to each other for a week, and we get joined by one of our community members, Sean Mullen. And if you're part of the Facebook group, you know Sean. I think he probably rivals Steve and I as far as being most active, sharing articles, commenting on what's out there, and really being a part of the great conversations that take place there. So if you're not a part of the group, fix yourself. Join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community. But no, we're excited to have an actual verbal conversation with Sean again, who we featured a while back with what he was working on. And Sean, hey, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Just to give everybody an update, I know you do post a bit about what you're working on over at the community, but for those who are just listening, give us a quick update on where you're at with don'tfeedthewolf.com and your writings and the book available on Amazon now.
Yeah, that's, I guess, most exciting thing is there's a book on Amazon, Black Hawk Volume 2. Yeah, that's the first prose kind of thing that I did. It's, I don't know, just to give a quick rundown, it's kind of like a Twilight Zone of horror is what we call it. It's about Black Hawk, Colorado, which is actually a real place, but what we represent is more of a fictional version of it. And then on the 14th of this month, so less than 2 weeks away, I have a new webtoon coming out called Criminal Romance. And yeah, this is more, I don't know, it's kind of a shot at, like, I keep calling it like my version of a pop song, more of a radio friendly type thing. It's definitely got a lot of flash, and you'll see when it comes out. So that's pretty much it for right now.
Yeah, so if you've ever checked out any of the webtoons or whatever else from Sean, you know, his version of a pop song is
a
bit darker. Like that,
I was gonna
that,
say the same
that
thing.
conceals a little bit about what this is gonna be, because Sean keeps everything on a little bit of a darker tone. It's his style there. So go ahead and think about that Black Hawk Twilight stuff he talked about. This is going to probably be the Twilight Zone of pop songs and rom-coms and whatever else. Yeah. With a great
he considers Rammstein, yeah, pop music.
that's not too far off. More like Eminem's pop music.
Yeah. For those who want to keep updated, just make sure you go over to don'tfeedthewolf.com, subscribe to the mailers list, and he keeps you updated on pretty much everything that's going on with him if you want to keep in the know.
Or just, you know, head over to the Nerd Cantina, join their group, and, you know, I'm pretty obnoxious on there, so hard to miss.
Yeah, I think you got one of those top fan icons.
Visual storyteller.
Are you the visual storyteller?
Yeah. I like that title, though. I was like, hey, that's cool.
Yeah, it works for especially somebody in the webtoon world.
Exactly.
If it said that about me, it's only just because they're just stating that I don't know how to write clearly. It's more of a command to tell me to do more memes and keep my mouth shut. But let's get into the news.
Yeah,
let's go ahead and get started. And right now we're recording this a couple hours after we watched the Super Bowl, and there's one ad I think that falls into the nerd community pretty well, and Disney Plus, gives their big commercial, paid a couple $1 million for a nice long commercial.
It was we know you heard about the delays. We've actually recorded some things. It's still gonna happen. Here they are. Trailer.
Yeah, pretty much. It's the they've gotten beat up because really no. no strong original content since The Mandalorian. You know, they've been out since November. Mandalorian's the only show that's worth watching. You know, they've got some minor things in the reality TV space or whatever else, but nothing for an adult who wants some mature content. And, you know, they showed it. They still didn't give any release dates. We still don't necessarily know when. They just said,
And you can tell what they're further along on then. You know, you got some good kind of WandaVision scenes. You got a couple quick snippets of the Winter Soldier and Falcon. And then Loki was just like a quick, like, the first thing they shot, and that's all they got. They're like, spice it up, you know, put the filters on it. We need a Loki promo. You know, it was cool to see in the flashes of the WandaVision her actually in her classic Scarlet Witch costume. So I wonder how they're going to play with that. You know, they don't do original costumes in the movie versions very well often. So to see her with the headgear on and the red dress, like, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's one thing. My buddy Danny sent me like a teaser poster that they have, and it's them both sitting on the couch in kind of like, you know, they're just like dressed up nicely or whatever, but their shadows tease the original costumes. And then that's what we saw in the trailer as well. So I think that they're both going to be in the original costumes. I mean, don't quote me on that, but that's...
Well, they're going to play with this whole alternate reality multiverse shit. So they have free range to do whatever they want and then just always claim, oh, alternate reality, don't worry, it doesn't need to make sense. We can write whatever we want. It's just fucking alternate realities.
I'm trying to remember which channel or whatever else put it up. But Elizabeth Olsen came on, and she went through a couple different comics that feature Scarlet Witch, some of the major arcs that have happened in the past. And she was like reading from the comics on TV, reading from the comics about her using magic to create her twins from Vision because they can't have kids.
Which I hope to God they do, because I have that issue. That, like, please, Disney, make my collection worth more monies. Give me all the monies.
So she also talks in there about and, like, shows the pages from the comics where she essentially uses her witch powers to say no more mutants.
House of M, greatest.
Through the House of
Greatest stories Marvel's ever told, House of M.
So, you know, there's speculation that if she could do that in House of M, right, there's speculation that you can go the opposite way, and that could be the way the mutants are created. That instead of her saying no more mutants, maybe she just says, give me more mutants. And then this is how you create that at now, this deep into MCU, seeing mutants.
In the group, and I haven't gone and double checked yet, but if you go to the Age of Ultron, when they first introduced the two characters and they're sitting in those cages, they weren't yet allowed to use the term mutant, but they did call them like children of something. I can't remember. Insinuating they were born like that. Yeah. So, like, is they've never used the term mutants, I still think they have the groundwork for mutants in the MCU just based on them kind of referring to Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch as being children of something, insinuating they were born that way. This is like the new dawn, and they could just, you know, pivot from that point. I don't think they even need to go that route if they don't want to.
What's the whole... Sorry to interrupt, but, like, are they able to, like, who has the rights to that right now still, or have you guys discussed that? Like, has that been transferred?
No, Disney has. It was part of Fox's deal.
Okay, so that's what they're waiting on. Okay. Now they have Fox.
They have full right to use the term mutants and use any of those characters.
Yeah, so now the challenge is just how do you explain in the mutants, like, where were they during Avengers time frame? Where were they during?
If you're a mutant and you sat Endgame out, you're kind of a piece of shit.
Well, so that then goes back to Ken's theory about maybe her creating the mutants, because that's one way they could play it off, like, oh, they weren't there, and now.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
And I think that's what the beauty of what we're going to see. That's why, you know, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness is so early in kind of this Phase 4 slating is. the multiverse can rewrite so much, and it can bring in whatever the hell you want at that point in time. The stories talk about some of the later things speculating about what Multiverse Madness is, that they can bring back even different versions of heroes. Yeah,
Robert Downey could come back. Anybody could come back. It's reality shifts and time travel has always been the ultimate cop out for
the reset button of comic books. Yeah.
You know, they do this big event and it's like, holy shit, Wolverine died? And it's like, yeah, he died for 7 months, but we're going to bring him back because God forbid we write comics without one of our major characters. So they just always bring him back. Well, that wasn't the real Wolverine. That was Wolverine from Earth, blah, 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 blah. And I've never been a fan of that method. Like, I wish that they would just stick to it and leave these people dead. And yeah, it's like, to me, it's just the ultimate cop-out to do something controversial, and then if fans don't like it, you get to undo it. It's the comic book undo button.
Yeah, it's kind of a way of them like having their cake and eating it too as well, because they get that big dramatic moment of doing something, but then they can reverse that. So it's like, at what point do you stop, like, you know, being as emotionally invested or actually feeling those deaths or whatever they do, you know?
Or you could just always do the Rise of Skywalker way and kill somebody, and five seconds later, no, guys, don't worry, nobody's actually dead. Nothing actually happens in this movie. Yeah.
I was tempted to make a Chewy sound there for a second.
Retcon. Well, the other Super Bowl kind of tidbit we got in the comic world was probably what I thought was the best commercial during the Super Bowl, and that was the Jason Momoa. What I don't even know the brand he was hawking for. I was so engulfed in what was going on.
That's true. That the advertisement failed in that regard. I have no idea what
they
he
needed
was
to put a logo in the corner, because I was just so fixated on the special effects in tiny emo Jason Momoa that, like, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you'll have to go to the show notes here at thenerdcantina.com/show62, as we'll have a link to it. But yeah, Jason Momoa just walking out as a, you know, huge dude. And when he first took off his boots, I was like, did he just shrink like 6 inches? It's like, what kind of boots was he wearing? But I thought that was just a part of it. And then, it clearly was showing that, he was in platform boots. What was the pull of his arms?
and I know the Super Bowl party I was at, we were sitting there and all the wives were sitting around and the commercial came on and you like audibly heard like three women being like, oh no, like, I can't unsee this. Like, it ruined at least 100,000 women's masturbatory skills, because they can never unsee that for the rest of their life.
It was a great commercial. I think it was my favorite commercial of the night. So it'll be up on the show notes for sure. If you haven't seen it, go check it out.
We got some gaming news.
Some video game news. And first one, let's go ahead and pull the thread on Warcraft 3 and get Sean fired up here.
The fact that Blizzard has one of the lowest Metascored games is like amazing to me. Like, this is a company that usually, I mean, even if they make a bad game, it's still not a bad game. It's just not a Blizzard, the bar's been set so high for them kind of game. And for this to just kind of shit the bed this bad, like, I'm not sure if it's actual, because I don't play Warcraft 3.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actual gripes or just their fan base, man. They did not come with what they needed for their fan base, and their fan base is mean.
You know, the timing of when they released this kind of hype and trailer, I believe, or for this new World of Warcraft, which was just it's the same game, but they just were supposed to up the graphics and add some things. But they did this right after, or it was BlizzCon, I believe, and it was, of course, right after that China controversy. So this was one of those things where they were kind of trying to win back fans' approval, and they did. For a bit, like, you know, Blizzard was kind of, you know, hey, everybody's kind of happy and whatnot, hyped up for this, and there's still people who've been playing the original World of Warcraft 3 for, you know, years now, And so they were pretty stoked too for the game to be getting back this attention. And then what happened was they delayed the release from when they initially said it was. And fans were like, okay, well, you know, obviously we're a little annoyed by that. But at the same time, if you're going to release it right. And then they did release it. And when they released it, it clearly was not what it was ready. It wasn't ready for release. It was not what was promised. Fans, I think, people were pointing out and saying, like, what they used for the trailers to advertise was like when they put in their best, like, I think they like beefed up the trailer and made it like cinematically and all that stuff, made it look really the gameplay a lot better than it was. Not to mention, they took away your like player profile and a bunch of things that fans who are really into Blizzard, like, you know, that's what their replayability is having your kind of this like profile that like upgrades over time as you win matches and this and that. And one of the other reasons they really pissed people off is because not only did they affect this new release of it, but they also took away features and messed with the original World of Warcraft 3. So all these players have been playing for years and years. I mean, this is one of their oldest games. They also got messed with. So even if you didn't buy the game, but you still played this old version, like, you lost a bunch of things. And yeah, so people were just really pissed off. And the fans, of course, and everybody took to the forums. They told people probably to go vote it down and give it the worst score and all that. But they also told, like, showed people clearly how you can get a refund step by step. And Blizzard's, as far as I know, is giving those refunds because, I mean, there's some question about their integrity and how they advertise and this and that.
Well, and they've recently had a lot of developers leave with that whole controversy and just them being such an aged company that some of the original guys aren't there. You got some new people in house trying to, you know, possibly making some poor decisions.
You know, it's
I when I first read it, like I said, I wasn't sure if it was just a Reddit campaign of angry Blizzard people that just bombarded the rating system. But from reading details, you know, if everything that was in the article is true, I'd be pissed too.
Yeah, and what's unfortunate too is Blizzard keeps on doing things that seem like it's a step in the right direction, like trying to bring, you know, understanding their flagship games like Diablo, World of Warcraft, Warcraft 3, and realizing like these fans will just love it if you kind of just try and bring back that old Blizzard, but, you know, maybe a new version of it. And then so they take a step in the right direction at first and everybody gets all excited and amped and, you know, they bring people back into WoW, they bring people back into Warcraft 3, but then they mess it up. They drop the ball and they just pull some shady stuff. I made the comparison with my friend because, you know, I haven't been invested or buying into anything with Blizzard in a long time. And he still, every time around the time when everybody gets hyped, he still gets in on the hype train and then he gets, you know, hit again. And the reason why I say hit too is because it's like I made the analogy. It's kind of like being in an abusive relationship. You just keep coming back and then you're, you know, and you forget every single time about the bad things they do when they do something good, and you get all excited and you talk them all up and then they abuse you again. And then you, this is endless cycle.
Yeah, so it's a fine line. Like you're talking about, you know, World of Warcraft, but Blizzard with like World of Warcraft Classic, what they've done with updates, with Diablo and now this with Warcraft 3, it could be seen as, you know, they recognize their fans and they're doing it to honor their fans or whatever else. Or it could very easily just be seen as, hey, they're willing to put in half-ass work to roll out these old games because they know their rabid-ass fans are just there they don't give a fuck about honoring the fans. If they did, they probably would put a little effort into, or more effort into having this well-prepared and handle it, right? We saw the huge crashes they had with World of Warcraft Online, the classic, when they did that. They keep failing in these regards and keep doing it, and it just is to go back to the well of their rabid fans.
Well, and they got Overwatch 2 coming out. They're fixing World of Warcraft. It's like, how much can they do at once? You know, like, where are they putting their eggs all in the basket at? You know, it's I'm willing to bet that the majority of their developers and the majority of their attention is going to Overwatch 2. I mean, they got the Overwatch League. It's still one of their most successful games. It's global. It's actually on consoles, so they have access to way more players than just the PC realm. Yeah, it are they just spreading themselves too thin? Is it not even a lack of caring, but just a trying to do too much at one time? You know, and to Sean's point, I think being a nerd, I think being a nerd and loving any franchise is just begging to be, you know, like Thelma and Louise. At some point, if they fuck you over too much, you just got to drive off the cliff and just wash your hands of them. Because, I mean, if Star Wars has proved anything to us, is that, you know, you punch me in the mouth and tell me you're sorry, I'm going to come back. that's what I know.
Star Wars, at least, though, is, you know, especially like we had Mandalorian. Everybody's happy with that. They do a good job.
Yeah, that's the I love you, baby. That's the I love you, baby. Exactly. Don't worry. Yeah, they do. I'll never do it again. Exactly. I love you. Here's a baby Yoda. And then Rise of Skywalker comes out, and I got a black eye. I'm talking to the mailman. And I, you know, I'm just so clumsy.
Holding your baby Yoda.
All right. Well, I think this kind of translates. I think a part of the issue is, right, these game companies in today's world, right, you no longer have to ship a cartridge or ship a disc that's fully ready. And you can rely on patches over time, and a lot of fans and stuff forgive that.
Fucking price.
Yeah, Warcraft and everybody else has relied on this. We see this with a ton of games. And then that continued model of we can fix the game over time. And then not to mention the new game models on what we're going to talk with our next story is this EA earnings call. And EA had their earnings call this last week. And what we see is, man, the vast majority of what the money they're making is in live online services, microtransactions. So to the tune of almost $1 billion in the fourth quarter alone, almost $3 billion total over the last 12 months. And it's 27% of their total profits or total revenue. So
yeah, it's amazing.
Huge money coming from microtransactions, from selling skins to
that's a lot of hats.
Apex Legends. I guess the majority of those microtransactions, which I kind of I stopped playing sport games a while ago, but I guess the ultimate teams in like FIFA, Madden, that's where they're actually getting most of that microtransaction money. So it's a crazy amount of money. Not from the original games, right? So it doesn't really matter. It's these microtransactions and mobile to some degree. Mobile's a pretty small component overall.
Well, I think we're all guilty of seeing like a feature in a game. Maybe not you, motherfucker, but I know I'm guilty of seeing like a 99-cent price tag or, you know, something really cheap to get this like cool skin, and it's just like, I like playing this game, I'll give them a buck. Well, when you multiply that by the hundreds of millions of people that play these games, those dollars add up really fucking fast. And that we've talked about it on the show before, that the model of video gaming is going to change. You know, Fortnite, I think, really raised the bar for everybody and said, look, we didn't even charge anybody for the game. We just said, here, all you fuckers play this for free, and they're raking in hundreds of millions of dollars selling, you know, dances that they're stealing from the hip-hop community. Like, it's just like, it's amazing the amount of money these people can do, and I'm assuming it's not that hard to write that code. You know, you're not paying these coders that much money to put a new dance in or to put a new skin in. You know, it's especially a lot of these skins, you know, they do the do the Star Wars events. They did like the Thanos event for the hype, the movie. You figure some of these games are even getting paid to put these skins in there as promotions for these movies and these other, you know, artists and things like that. So they're probably even making money on the back end from writing this code. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a big change. We said it, you know, we've been talking about it for a while with kind of this Fortnite model, Apex Legends model. Don't know when it's going to translate to, I guess, a broader side of these things, like you see with like these EA Sports games. You know, I talked about that. That was a huge revenue giver with regard to microtransactions. You know, when do they just start giving those games for free and downloadable? Do you need your $50 up front when you can generally account for more than that? If you look at the numbers, you know, they're making three times more in the live services than the actual full game sales. So, I don't know. You give the game to more people, maybe you just end up multiplying that even more in these microtransactions.
Well, to stay with EA's earnings, they've also stated that Fallen Order surpassed their best expectation of game sales for theirs. So I do see EA sitting down at a bunch of board meetings and trying to really think about where do we go from here? Because imagine, you know, they would have to crunch the numbers, but imagine if you gave out the new Madden for free or the new FIFA for free. How much money, you know, would the profit in sales, because those are two of their highest selling games, people are going to buy those games the minute they come out anyways, would they gain more in microtransactions from the people like me that ain't just, I ain't buying the new Madden, like, I don't give a fuck. I'll play last year's on EA Access. I don't give a shit. Are they going to make more money from people like me that are going to now play the game because it's the access is free? Like, I'd be interested to see how those numbers crunch out.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder too if part of it is like eventually, you know, like you're saying, the model could change, especially, I mean, Fortnite's leading the charge there, but at the same time, they've been selling these games for so long and also doing that, and I wonder if part of it is just a whole thing like they're going to keep those same price tags and pretend like you're getting something more with them, because the second they start giving that away, then they got to just give that away with everything.
But they're doing is giving. So to me, this has always been a frustration. We're not printing out. You don't need to print artwork. You don't need to mold a plastic case. You don't need to burn a disc. You know, if you're just giving away digital content, you're just giving away source code. You know what I mean? Like, how much is that really costing you? You know, so the amount of profit that you're losing could be offset just in the money you spent on making discs. Like, I don't fucking know what these numbers are. Like, yeah, I'd like to be able to fly in that board meeting. But yeah, if you just say, look, we're going to download only, and then we're going to give it away for free, and we're going to have all these microtransactions. Do you make more money? Do you make less money? I don't know. These are questions I'd love the answers to.
Yeah, and I think these big companies could definitely take that risk. You know, if there's even a risk, who knows? It could just pay off right away. They should definitely test it out. But I guess maybe their concern is if they test it out or they try it and then it turns out that doesn't sell as well or whatever, like, it'd be kind of weird for them to try and go back or whatever. Then they got to try and convince you again why you should pay that extra money.
All right. Well, I think it's time to transition our way over to some tech topics here. The first tech topic, I think. We'll go with the Ring stories and a recap for those who haven't been listening over the last, I guess, month. We've talked about Ring a couple times with regards to, you know, there was the story of the Ring camera in the girl's bedroom who was hacked, and some creep was telling her that Santa doesn't exist and telling her to kill herself and all kinds of other terrible things. And then that family, along with others, joined a class action suit to sue Amazon regarding privacy concerns and their lack of security. Steve always took the side of just change your passwords and quit being idiots and quit using your, I think you said your Yorkie and birthday as your password, and then maybe your kid won't be told to kill themselves. And I was a bit on the side that it just requires more investigation on, I think these companies are at fault. They should be pushing, the companies like this should be absolutely requiring two-factor authentication.
They're at fault in the same way that the snowblower is at fault for you snowblowing your roof because they didn't put that fucking sticker that says not to be used on roof. Like, are they really at fault, though? Like, really?
I disagree, right? And I do think that they are a bit at fault because they know that there are certain exploits, and they know there are and anybody in the security industry knows that passwords are they are hackable.
But isn't this a slippery slope? Like then why aren't the gun companies at fault for mass shootings? Like if this is the standard that we're going to hold all our companies to, you make weapons of death, people die from them. You should put better regulations on your own products so that people don't die. It's like, nah, man, I make a gun. If you're going to use it, like, you know what it does. It's on you what you do it after that point. Look, I made a doorbell. It comes with a password. You're dummy. If you don't put a trigger lock on your Ring camera and it gets used for misharm, that's your fucking bad, man. It's your fucking bad.
All right. Well, there's other things that have come out about Ring this week. So first, Electronic Frontier Foundation, who we tend to follow their work pretty closely. This week, they announced that Ring doorbells have been exposed for providing data to other companies, such as the five companies that they found that they were sharing data, talking about your privacy data within your home, use data surrounding how you use your cameras and everything else, to Facebook, a company Branch, AppsFlyer, Mixpanel, and as well as Google Analytics. So you've got an Amazon-owned Ring company taking privacy data from Ring and sharing it with the other companies. And this in itself it's got to be some kind of breach of privacy, right? Nobody wants this. All the big boys, Facebook, Amazon, Google, I don't want them to play nice together. Like, you should not be sharing.
I mean, especially after I pay $200, $300 for a motherfucking camera, and then you're just, again, you're profiting on the back end. So you charge me hundreds of dollars for the equipment, then you charge me a monthly bill for your recording service, and then on the back end you're gonna take all my information that I think is safe and private and sell it to some of the richest people in the world for whatever the fuck they want to do with it, and I get no return on that product whatsoever. It's such a scandalous business model.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. This is, I mean, so many companies are doing these kind of things and making profit off of it. And right now I don't know, if you have the opportunity to make that money, why not? Why wouldn't we? And why should we pay people, this and that? I mean, businesses are always going to be.
Oh yeah. You can't really blame the businesses, but at some point we have a government entity that is supposed to, all they do is consumer protection, right? Like, yeah. How does this not fall into that realm of us as consumers need that protection?
Yeah, and this is where, we're in a new, there are new economic drivers that exist, and they're just not being looked at by regulators in the same way. The idea of consumer protection hasn't yet been a focus on really what is all of this data. How transparent do companies need to be with this data? California passed the law, was it January 1st? It became in effect that at least companies had to say and give you an opportunity to opt out of any data sharing. But that's only one state of the 50 federal government. There's still no federal regulation that requires companies to in any way tell us what they're doing, to request our permission. And when we buy the camera, there's no way to opt out of it. Just buying the camera in itself is not, hey, I own this, I could do what I want with the information. That is not a fact. So unless you're a California resident, you have no control over how they use or share your data. So it's definitely something to look for, and legislators are going to have to get on board with this. But just to further Ring, so that's a company issue, right? The company issue sharing the data. And then you have an Amazon engineer who worked for Ring, who wrote into the publication Medium stating that due to software, due to privacy issues that exist within Ring, that company Ring should be shut down immediately and never brought back. That there is no legislation that can actually improve
or regulate
the privacy.
This is a bit tinfoil hat-ish, though. Like, so this,
yeah, but tinfoil hat-ish from a dude who's working on the program.
Yeah, okay, well...
That's called a whistleblower.
Who knows what information he has access to that we don't...
I don't know if it's full whistleblower. I'd say kazoo blower maybe at this point. But he, like... you know, his fear is that eventually this is how a police state gets started, is that we all voluntarily put these doorbells on our homes, and then 10 years from now, the government just commandeers them all and says, oh, thanks for all the cameras, guys. We're going China. We're going full China on your asses now. Like, that's his major fear. I mean, there also is a legitimate fear that he stated that some Amazon employees that have access to these cameras are watching these cameras and, you know, kind of invading your privacy by looking at some of these video feeds and things like that. So that's something they definitely should address. But his fears of just us putting cameras everywhere and giving backdoor access to possible governments, that's a little tinfoil hat-ish. I hope as we realize kind of what we're doing here, we put up those firewalls as a society and make sure we don't let the government go full Snowden on us at some point.
That's one thing in general that I think where a lot of these issues come from is think about how slowly government moves and how quickly all this technology is moving. That's, you know, one of the things is this tech and everything that's happening and what our capabilities are and all this is moving at such a quick rate that, it can kind of spiral out of control, and there's people who can take advantage and do things without us even knowing. And I mean, some of the stuff that you're talking about right now with the Ring and the cameras is kind of flashing me back to just, but at the same time, I mean, we already have our cell phones, we have our computers. I mean, people are already logging in and watching us on our cameras. So yeah, that's nothing new. I mean, and speaking of Snowden, I mean,
and then you got a guy like Snowden that comes out and makes you aware of it, and the entire country turns on the guy, and he's got to live in Russia for the last 10 years. Like, it's a messed up kind of like situation that we've kind of chosen to handle this. Like, I mean, if you're an anti-Snowden person, it really makes me curious as to why. Necessarily, like,
but the whole Snowden thing, it, and with like these cameras now becoming available everywhere, and they're in our homes or in our bedrooms or, you know, on everybody's front door and businesses, what you see with the Snowden thing is, you know, when the government all of a sudden chooses security, right, you can put air quotes around that if you want, over privacy, during the Patriot Act, they were able to go in and take whatever records, listen to phone calls, do whatever they want, right? And now when the next terrorist attack happens or the next event that's going to cause security to be priority over privacy again, and now all of a sudden all of these cameras and all of these Internet of Things devices and everything becomes fair game. Patriot Act was able to do it with phones. What prevents it from happening to Internet of Things devices in the future?
Nothing. Nothing. Hopefully, newly elected president and a smarter society fixes that. I mean, that's really our only hope at this point.
So I think with guys like this, what he's talking about is, yeah, it's tinfoil hat-ish. But I mean, we're less than 20 years from the last tinfoil hat-ish, you know, huge overreach of privacy with the NSA. So you can see that this does have the potential to blow up in all of our faces, that we could be paying our way into setting up the government's.
And I think that's the worst part about it, is that we're all paying out of pocket to install our government surveillance system. Like, if that's how it ends up in the next 10 years, like, we are fucking up royally right now. Like, yeah. At least use my tax dollars. Like, just the government could just at least start sending people free Ring cameras. Like, yeah. It's the least you could do if you're going to do this shit.
That's the thing, is unfortunately, I mean, I think I've definitely talked about this privately with you before, Steve, or whatever. You give up so much privacy and other things for convenience, you know? I mean, it's just...
Well, I said it last week. If you want true freedom, you have to be okay with letting some criminals win. Like, you can't have it both. You can't have perfect security and perfect freedom. Like, they can't happen at the same time. You can't have that. So... You got to pick one, man. Do you not care about, you know, the government constantly looking over your shoulder and having access to whatever you do, or are, you know, do you want the government to stay out of your fucking house and be able to live a truly free life? You know, pick one and run with it.
By the way, one last thing I will say in regards to this Ring thing that I was just thinking about is, we've had our phones and our computers for a while now, with these cameras and this and that. So we've had a lot more time to prepare security measures and more privacy and making sure it's not just anybody can log into them. The whole Ring thing is pretty new. So I could see maybe that's why some of the concern is it's maybe it's a lot easier to freaking hack into these things. There's way less security measures than getting into a phone or a computer. Because they're newer, they probably have less security.
Well, and like you said, we trade privacy for convenience. It's known, and this is one of the main complaints that me and Steve arguments we have, is that I argue that they should. It's way harder to get into a computer webcam. It's way harder to get into your phone webcam. The Internet of Things devices are built with convenience in mind and not security in mind, and your password is always hackable. I don't care how good your password is. A good enough computer with computing power is going to hack into it. That can't be where we end. It's not where we end with computer prevention. So why do we end there with Internet of Things devices? And that's my big argument is
I have,
what you're talking
I have
about
two
there.
Factor
it's easier
on my
to get
doorbell.
Into those cameras.
I have two factor on my doorbell, so, but I don't have a Ring. I have a Nest.
Well, I think we beat this one up in the end. Let's move forward to, I guess, what's become like our every other week topic. I think we can just call this segment "Fuck China." And I think inflection and punctuation matters, right? There's times where it's really like "fuck China," and then there's times where it's like "fuck
China."
I really feel like it. I think this week's almost kind of a "fuck China."
Yeah,
man, they are, you know, in the news and the negative light for a lot of things right now. I guess first, you know, we can follow up. We did talk a bit last week about the coronavirus and just kind of how AI helped detect it and some of the parts that it played. Not so much the virus in itself. It continues to grow in its numbers and its deaths and its out in its spread. And what we see is that this pushback against, and this there's articles about really the censorship, you know, the great firewall of China that there allows them to block everything that comes in and out, completely censor their public from receiving the news and seeing the news about what the rest of the world is saying about this virus, while in the communities where it's spreading, they don't even know it's happening, and the world's talking about it already. And then not to mention them blocking the ability to get the word out. And the ripple effect is, it's not just that your people are ignorant. Is that now your diseases are spreading at a rate that should have been controllable if we would have known, if everybody would have known ahead of time. So the disease has spread further than it should have, and it's having some really like huge economic impacts. Yes, to China. China just opened up their markets yesterday, and I think their entire market, Chinese market, tanked. It was like 9 or 10% yesterday. But worldwide, you know, so we see airlines shut down, cruise liners shut down. We see all kinds of things and a significant economic impact because of this great firewall of China and just saying, hey, we are going to control the narrative on everything.
Yeah. And as we stated, like, at what point is China to be held responsible and consider them either acts of aggressions on countries or, I mean, like, does Carnival Cruise get to sue the country of China now? Because they've lost X amount of profits because they've had to quarantine three boats and, you know, like they can't, you know, do their tours on the schedule that they've originally gone. Like you said, there's massive fallout from this, and China is just basically giving us a big fuck you. We don't care. We do things how we do it. You guys can deal. Yeah, this is kind of shitty.
I thought, John, you'd have a, but
yeah, I know, just, I'm trying to think. You know, I'm just thinking about it. It's very
in a depression cycle over there.
it's very, you know, like I read this chart between comparing 1984 and A Brave New World, and they talk about different ways of just taking over and whatnot. And there's, you know, there's the U.S. model where we're fed so much information that you never know what's true or what's not. And then China's the other side of things where they're completely oppressed and withheld from information. So I'm like figuring, you know, I'm like, well, at least on our side, the truth does get out, but it's just muddled and mixed in and we don't know what to believe or this or that. Whereas they're just, I don't even know, what are they hearing? What are they, you know, I wish I knew more information about what it's like to be there and living there. Like, what are they hearing about this information? Are they just being told everything's fine, don't worry? Is it not even allowed? You're just not even allowed to discuss it? Like, how bad is this?
Yeah, the only real, you know, hints that we got were, you know, that I want to say it was still pretty late into January where we were talking about it pretty openly on the world stage, and it still wasn't even in the local newspapers in Wuhan district, telling people to protect themselves from it and telling them anything about it. So
yeah, so if you're a good Chinese citizen, while we're over here worried about it, you're living next to it and you don't even know.
That's insane, because you know, I live in Santa Barbara, and there's been two cases in Ventura, which is like half an hour away. I've had people freaking out and not wanting to travel here in the U.S.
Man, the first human contracted case was down the street from my fucking house right here in Chicago.
Yeah, first human-to-human transfer outside of China.
Yeah. Yep. So I can, you know, it's weird. Part of me, on the one hand, you're just like, okay, we know how, you know, mass hysteria can make things worse and this and that. And but at the same time, too, sometimes maybe it's warranted and, you know, at least people should be exercising caution and be aware of these things, and they should be able to make the decision.
I mean, and this is going to be something that, like, NATO, the UN, the WHO, they're going to have to take up with China. And if they don't recognize the threats that they pose to the world by doing this shit, I mean, the entire world is just going to have to sanction the shit out of them. Because I know China has allies, you know, of, you know, with Russia and allies that aren't our allies. But even our enemies who are their allies are going to have to at some point say, well, what's good of having China as an ally if they're just going to send over coronaviruses and kill our population off? You know, because like what happens when the first couple, you know, outbreak in Russia happens? You really want, you still going to be friends? Is that your boy still, Putin? Like, I don't know.
Well, speaking of other threats from China, let's move from disease to tech. And you get, and maybe this has disease too. So the first article, we've got a couple different arrests taking place.
We can say in the disease one
and,
first.
Yeah, the first one's disease still, because it's a Harvard professor who, him and then some Chinese nationals, all unrelated personally, but three different people getting arrested this week for ties with China. One of them being a Harvard professor who is a biochemist and doing certain research, and he didn't disclose. He was funded in like a DOD grant to do some biological testing and studying here at Harvard. And he didn't disclose that he's been paid by Chinese grants and money from their, I think it's called like the Thousand Talents Program, where they hire scientists from across the world and they put them on like stipends yearly. So he's been getting paid by China since 2012 and didn't disclose it to the Department of Defense, and has been accused of sharing information, allegedly at this point in time, sharing information with China. And then you've got two students, one that also was doing some biological studying, didn't disclose on her visa that she was a lieutenant in the Chinese military. And then another one that was actually smuggling biological materials from labs that was also on a visa funded by Harvard.
Got caught with a suitcase full of viruses.
Jesus.
Going to China. Some straight up movie shit, bro.
Yeah. So all three of those came and were announced in the same week, in this last week. All of them being, yes, having a biological component to them, all of them being in kind of academia and studying.
And the lab the dude was helping them build was in Wuhan.
Yeah.
Like, coincidence, man? Yeah. Like, really? Like, you don't even need to give me the tinfoil hat for this one.
Really?
Like,
you're going to go grab that ring tinfoil hat and put it on now?
Like, man, like, no, like, I don't even think you need it. Like, these are facts. These are actual arrests. They got caught red-handed doing these things. Like, this is some fucked up shit. Like, hang him in the town square at this point for all I give a shit. Like, this, to me, this is treason.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual punishment of these things. I mean, two of them are Chinese nationals, right? They were here on visas, on academic visas. So two of them, I don't really even know what the recourse is.
Send them back to Wuhan with masks on for all I give a fuck. Let them cough in somebody else's face.
And then, the Harvard professor, he's probably looking at some negative stuff, because this was a guy who had
Gitmo. Put him in Gitmo. Fuck him.
Like a government secret clearance and everything else. So he might find himself in a bit of trouble.
Like, you're a motherfucking Harvard professor. You should be smarter than this. Like, go send him to Cuba. I don't give a fuck.
Well, somebody else who should have been smarter that got arrested is a Raytheon engineer this week who was arrested for supposedly or allegedly sharing U.S. missile defense secrets to China. And this is Raytheon, huge government contractor, very involved in a lot of missile systems and technology in both missile defense and missile systems in general. And he requested permission to go to China with his work computer. They told him, no, man, like you can't do that.
Nah, bro. Nah.
So then he ends up going on vacation anyway, bringing his computer, tells Raytheon that he only went to Singapore and the Philippines. And then he gets back on January 7th, just sends an email after getting back from his trip, just saying that he up and quits. He's been at Raytheon for 10 years. He's quitting now to go live and study abroad. And then they find out that, no, he had his computer. He brought it with him. He did not go to Singapore and Philippines only. He went to mainland China and then comes back, and within a days is quitting and heading back to China. And he's now being accused of sharing missile defense secrets and then taking a position over in China.
Yeah, I'm getting to the point now. It's like Chinese spies are everywhere.
They are.
Like,
and don't get me wrong, we're all over China too. Like, there's no way we're not doing the same shit over there.
Yeah, but like, really, are we all over there? Because we are a melting pot society. I can't just like quarantine off the Chinese food delivery man at my house and think that he's a spy. You see a 6 foot tall white dude walking around China, like, it's, you could be suspicious of that guy. You could be a little more suspicious of him than I can be of
Ling. We have Chinese Americans. They don't have to be 6 foot tall white dudes.
Jeez.
We're a melting pot, man.
Here's Steve's bias showing through.
Yeah, but they're very good at picking those out. Like, it's if you weren't born in China, they don't trust you, period.
Yeah, but just like the Harvard professor, you know, yeah, they sent Chinese nationals on visas, but they also incentivize and fine people. There was recent, I think it was about 6 months ago, a Chinese military officer who came out and defected, and he'd been working and giving us information for years. These things happen.
I wouldn't doubt that if China denies any visa of an American-born Chinese descendant, like, just because they don't want that camouflaged motherfucker coming into their society. Like, I would not doubt that. Like, that's how like strict they are about this shit. Like, no, we'll let the white dude in, we'll let the black dude in, we could keep a close eye on him. But no. You ain't sneaking in.
They got facial recognition everywhere. They'll be fine.
How much do you think that China's paying for these secrets? Were they paying anything? Because I mean, they're pretty good at just stealing
printing
things.
Their own money.
Stealing things. I mean, why? I'm just wondering why this guy even, you know, took this risk. And I mean, he must have had he has an incredible job, right? I mean, working for Raytheon, like, I'm sure he was being paid well. Like, what is, you know, what even incentivizes somebody to take a risk like that? I mean, I can't imagine that they were. Yeah, I'm just. That's what I'm kind of curious about.
Man, maybe he's got a pee video. We don't know.
there's a lot of things. Yes, they do pay. Like, the Harvard professor was getting paid, I think, $158,000 a year by China. Jeez. As a part of that Thousand Talents program. There's other people that have been exposed through the Thousand Talents program that were in similar kind of, they're paid out as almost like grants to collaborate with the Chinese. And it just so happens to be that these people are also then encouraged to go get grant money and to go get programs in the United States while they're still working for China. So yeah, there's definitely money involved. And maybe some extortion involved along the way too.
I would more lean towards extortion with some of them than cash. Like, cause like you said, if you're making six figures at your job already, another like six figure offer, yeah, it's nice, but getting caught, like either you're so arrogant that you think you're good enough to not get caught, or like you're just really greedy as shit. Like, I don't know. I would tend to lean towards the extortion route.
It's possible, but it seems like even like this Raytheon engineer, would you think he was extorted to then go move to China? No, he was incentivized to go move to China to go work there.
Oh yeah.
So, well, I don't know. We'll see. But
I'd rather be an upper middle class American though than a rich Chinese person. I couldn't imagine giving up all those freedoms and living in a police state and living under China law, unless they were just like, look, man, you're going to be part of that upper 1% of China that don't adhere to these rules. That's for the peasants. Like, We're going to put you in this upper class. There ain't going to be no cameras on your streets. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you're going to be Shanghai, China, not Wuhan, China.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think we'll call that an end to our segment of, Fuck
China.
China. for this week. And let's move to a couple ending stories here. And I don't know, let's do an uplifting one. Good for the environment, Stephen. This is your 60 minutes a day of exercise could be powering your home.
Yeah, some dude made a bike that if you ride this bike, you know, big generator wheel on it for 60 minutes a day, it could power your entire house. Now, when you say that, no, it's not going to power probably anybody that's listening to this podcast's house. Like, your big energy guzzling 2,200 square foot house, you know, I don't care how many LED lights in there, that bike isn't going to power that. What this was, the guy who made it is based out of India. So when you think about the average house size and family consumption of energy in India, yeah, now you can kind of scale that up and think about a bike powering, you know, pedaling for an hour, actually powering that house, which is kind of cool. I think the article states that there's still over a billion people in the world that don't have access to a power grid. So having a technology like this could drastically change a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, If this could scale up or whatever else, you know, me and my wife, we are avid cyclists, and we'll pull out a bicycle trainer and sit and watch TV at night on the bike. If I could just charge my batteries, my Tesla battery at the house, we're doing it. Let's do this. I'll hamster wheel it every night.
Yeah, that it never amazes me how cheap you actually are. Because I know this has nothing to do with fitness. Like me, it's like, man, maybe I can get my fat ass on a bike and get some free TV.
No, I'm already on the bike. Hours. I'm just trying to get paid for what I'm already doing.
No, but like I said, it's a cool little gadget. You know, you could see a lot of these small communities in these third world countries just having a couple of these bikes, putting them in community centers, putting them in major hubs and giving them access to power, like where there are no power stations and grids or generators whatsoever.
It's just
a cool thing.
It's a cool thing. And just slap it in the next like spinning class and just put all those ladies to work.
Put a Peloton sticker on it. Fucking
put all them ladies to work across the country. Just spinning classes, just contributing to the world. Let's do it.
Yeah, it just sounds like slavery with extra steps. That's the only thing I just keep thinking about with this whole thing, though. Like, just to be funny about it. But the other funny thing, or not funny, but, you know, in general is, I mean, in third world countries, these poor motherfuckers are already pretty active, you know, like their whole lives are active and everything they have to do. Like for us, it's a luxury, you know, to sit down on something and like we have to force ourselves to be active. But I mean, these people live active lives. Like, you know, sometimes they got to go out to the well and get water or this, that. Who knows?
You're asking some malnourished Indian who eats nothing but rice and potatoes to now pedal for fucking an hour a day. Like, you fucking heartless savages.
By the way, we do not want to set up electricity in your area. So, yeah, pedal on this thing.
You just see sweatshops of five-year-olds on pedals powering some sewing factory or some some telecom hub.
Like, pedaling wool
5 cents a week. Like, way to take it to a dark place, pal.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
I mean, humans are savages. That's definitely going to happen. Like, I'm not even going to argue with you. I already picture a floor with 80 of these bikes with any kids 5 to 10 years old powering in the basement while there's a bunch of like 100 telemarketers and Comcast customer supporters in the room above them.
Tell you what, it's already going on, and this guy just decided to double down on his profits by releasing this and pretending now that
we're going to retail. Yeah. Now we're going to retail. Oh, shit, we suck.
Well, yeah, we're terrible. Well, I think for the sake of time, let's call this the end of episode 62 at the Nerd Cantina Show here. And
let's end it on a high note and at least
that was a high note.
We started high, we ended low. But I do want to put the story in the show notes of Tesla announcing their first annual profit. Tesla announced a nice profit, just so that people click the link and watch Elon Musk do the jig on stage for 5 minutes.
Oh man, it was
Cause,
painful.
Because that'll put a smile to the end of the show.
Definitely for anybody listening. Yeah, Elon doing like a weird walks like the Egyptian, awkward. Man,
we made monies, guys. Now watch me dance. It was so awkwardly horrible.
Didn't he just release his own little EDM song too? Top it off.
I heard he did. I have not seen it. But yeah, I did hear that he released that. But
that guy is such a character. I love him.
He's spectacular.
You gotta love that dude, man. You gotta love that dude.
But yeah, we'll go ahead and end this here and say thanks for listening to episode 62. We're gonna cap this off and we're gonna begin some Oscars talk for an exclusive Oscars preview show. So I don't know whether when you listen to this episode, you should go and check out on over on our page the Oscars exclusive prediction show. But we're gonna transition to that now. So thanks again for listening. If you are not a member of the Nerd Cantina community, hey, just join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community. That's where you'll find all three of us throwing as many random articles and continuing conversations over there. And
so, I got nothing.
I was just saying, don't you want to, you know, tag your promote the Patreon? Sign up for $1.
Yeah, you know, give me $1. Same as always, guys. Give us $1. We'll give you a sticker. We'll do some nice shows for you. And we'll get some better equipment around her.
Yeah, Steve can get that exercise bike, start pedaling.
I got two daughters, man. They will take
put them
shifts
to work. They can at least power up long enough for your Xbox to start up.
All right. Well, that all said, hey, thanks again for listening, nerds, and talk to you next week.
See you next week.